Hello, my name is Andreina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles,
a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wicks and candles.
In this episode, The Woman King. This is a special episode for many reasons, but one is that we got to watch this movie together in Vancouver this past October when Gabby came to visit.
Oh yes, Nene, that was so good to watch the film together. We have watched many films together in our lives, but it was something that we had never done so far for our podcast. So that was quite special.
Yeah, we are so lucky to have had this opportunity. So, okay, all right, Gabby, let's get this episode going. To start, as always, can you give us some facts about the film?
Yes, there's so much to say about this film, so I'm really going to try to keep it short, as short as possible. The Woman King is an American movie about the Agoge, the all-women army of the West African kingdom of Dahomey. Dahomey is or was located in what is today Benin. The film plays in the 1820s, and Nene, I will leave the details of the plot for you when you mention them later on. The film premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival in September 2022, after many years of preparation. It was very difficult to find a studio, film studio, that would be willing to provide the appropriate budget to make this movie. Watching some interviews with the cast and the crew, I learned that their first attempts to get this project approved failed because they got only like a fragment of the budget that they needed. And it was only after the impressive success of Black Panther, that was a huge blockbuster, that some studios were willing to talk about it, and one studio decided to proceed with the project and provide the appropriate budget. And also they had, this is also an interesting piece of information, they were also struggling to get the cast they wanted, because they wanted an all-black cast, and some studios were not willing to go into that. Anyhow, so that was a little bit of how it got to how I got the project to start. The film was directed by Gina Prince-Bicewood, and it was written by Dana Steven. So she wrote the script together with another woman named Maria Bello, who visited Benin in 2015 to research the Agoge. So they two came together, and Dana Steven wrote the script. Now to the cast, it stars Viola Davis in the main role of Naniska, the general leader of the Agoge. We see maybe the most important supporting role, we see South African actress Tuso Mbedu as Nawi. We see Lashana Lynch as Itsogi, Sheila Atim as Amensa. And just to mention the main female characters, and then we see there's three male figures that play a role in the film. They're played by Hero Finn Tiffin. He plays the role of Santo Ferreira. John Boyega as King Geso. And we know John Boyega, just to give you a hint, from the Star Wars trilogy. As Finn. And last but not least, we also see Jordan Bolger as Malik. To mention some of the accolades, it was a quite successful film. It got many nominations in several categories in many different critics' awards and film festivals. Funnily enough, nothing on the Oscars, no Academy Award nomination at all. But it was quite successful in the Black Reel Awards, winning on the categories of directing, best motion picture, and breakthrough performance by Tuso Mbedu. One last piece of trivia that I found very interesting while researching. The director, Gina, she made it a must for the actresses to do their stunts themselves. At the beginning, when they read the script, some of them were like, will I get a double to make the stunts? And she was like, you will get some training and you will do your stunts yourselves. Because for me, it's very important that you get so into character that you do it yourself. And so they had to train. They had to train a lot.
Wow.
At the beginning, there was just a schedule for 2 hours a day. Yeah, to do this, to do like a really tough physical training and not just like, you know, getting some strength and so on, but also in martial arts, different kinds of martial arts. And then it was Tuso, who plays the role of Naoi, who approached Gina and said, I don't know, I guess I need a little bit more training because I don't know, I need more. Can I do 3 hours of training? And so the director found that very... very interesting. And she said, well, everybody does 3 hours of training as well. So everybody ended up doing 3 hours of training daily to be able to do all the stunts themselves in the film. And, well, we will talk about it later. This is certainly extremely impressive and certainly had a big influence on how they developed their character and on their performances. Yes, so those were the most important facts about the movie. Now, Nene, it's your turn. Can you tell us a short summary on the plot?
Well, of course, Gabby, as always, thank you for those facts and kind of pieces of trivia. That's fascinating, very interesting. Yeah, so as always, I'll try to be brief and tell the plot without revealing everything. All right, so here it goes. The Woman King tells the story of the Agoji, an all-female warrior unit in the Kingdom of Dahomey, today Benin, in West Africa. The story takes place in 1823, at the height of the Dahomey Kingdom's power, and centers around Naniska, the current general and leader of the army. The film follows her personal story of loss, tragedy, and political triumph as she rises to the role of Woman King. But it also follows Naoi, a young new recruit into the Agoji who serves as our guide into their military training and life, combining battle scenes, action sequence, political intrigue, and historical recreation of the slave trade. The Woman King is a film shining a light into a remarkable but almost unknown period of African history. All right.
Very good, Nene.
That was my attempt.
It was
an applaud.
I think you did it very well.
All right. And since starting this season, we thought that it would be important to provide some historical context to around the movies that we're watching and discussing. So I'm just going to give a brief paragraph about the context and the history in which this film is based. So as Gabby mentioned, and as I mentioned, talking about the plot, Dahomey was a kingdom in West Africa that rose in power in the 17th century, until it conquest by the French in 1894 in what is now southern Benin. According to Britannica.com, the kingdom thrived and prospered through the sale of enslaved people to Europeans, sadly. Dahomey reached the height of its splendor during the reign of King Gisso, who is the king who's portrayed in the film. King Gisso ruled between 1818 and 1858. During his reign, Gisso took the existing palace guard, the Agoji, and turned it and expanded it into a military force of about 6,000 women at their peak. As portrayed in the film, after Britain abolished the slave trade in the 1830s, Dahomey slowly transitioned into the trade of palm oil as their main economic activity, as opposed to the sale of enslaved people. And we can see all of these things portrayed in the film. So I think it was important to look how accurate and, you know, just to learn a little bit. And, you know, I think the film does touch on some of these very key important points.
Very well, Nanny. Thank you so much for that. I think now we have a clear view on what the movie is about and where are we located in history.
Yeah.
Yes. So I guess now we're all prepared to start our discussion. And I think it is clear which significance this movie has in terms of representation, not only because it's mainly female film made by women about women, but also, of course, because it's black women and a rather unknown story from Africa. So it's very Latin with representation. So what are your thoughts on this?
This is a huge question. But my thoughts on this is that this is a much needed movie in these times. And I'm so happy it got made. And I actually enjoy watching it a lot. In many ways, this is a typical Hollywood film. We might touch on this later. I don't know. How can I say this? Hollywood has the power to tell stories. This has been kind of like a theme this season a little bit. That Hollywood has the capacity to tell large stories that are accessible to a lot of people just by the sheer scale of their storytelling. So I think I'm not sure if there have been other films. Probably there have been small documentaries about it, like very small TV documentaries about the Agoge. But to have a Hollywood movie with a large budget, with real movie stars in it, I think is very powerful, and I think it's important. And I think the movie accomplishes a lot of what it set out to do. You know, to see, first of all, a period of history that is unknown, especially in the West, especially for people here in the American continent, for us to know any African history, we have to admit we don't know much, any of those, any African country national histories. We seldom know it. I, as a Venezuelan, seldom know any history of any African country. So first of all, to know the history of a country, and then to see a movie filled with women warriors, it's like a dream. It's like a fever dream. It's like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's extremely powerful. And I was inspired many times throughout the film. We will tell our opinion on the film, but the thing remains that I was thrilled, moved, exhilarated, just by the sheer images and just the idea that this kind of army existed. Whether you agree with what they were doing or not, just it's remarkable. The last thing I will say is that we talk about this often too in our podcast, is that history is not a straight line. And the freedom of women is also not a straight line. Here we have a group of women that for about 100 and something years, 150 years or so, or more, like about 200 years, were a force to be reckoned with, were feared, and who exerted their power in non-traditional ways. And then they disappeared. It's remarkable, right, that they existed in this pocket of history. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are my thoughts. What are your thoughts?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I was a little bit too daring to
ask
this question because I am also very challenged by it myself. I think the first impression is, of course, extremely, as you mentioned, extremely powerful. or empowering, powerful and empowering at the same time. It's a huge combination of factors. It's a lot of women, which is very important for us, and it's Black women, which is so rare. What it also, yeah, so it is definitely, it was definitely necessary to tell the story, as controversial as it might be for the historical facts, and we might touch on that maybe later on. But that it, the sheer fact that they had this influence on a powerful level in governance in that kingdom shows what an important role they played, and which trust the king had on the women to fulfill this function, to have this function, to defend their kingdom. Yeah, he didn't. He never hesitated, or not only he, but as you mentioned, they existed for a few decades, a couple of centuries. So it was a tradition that women were seen as powerful as men, as fierce as men, as strong as men, to carry military duties and to fight fierce battles. So I think it has a wide range of symbolism, what it really means for the audience, for certain audiences, of course, in particular. So yeah, that's all the most positive. I have to admit that, of course, while watching the film, I mean, it is really beautiful, and we will go into details through the main characters later on. It confronted me with one topic that I had never really given a thought about, and it's women and violence, you know, because the film has like no hesitation, it doesn't hesitate to show brutal battles, brutal fighting.
Yeah.
And it was exhilarating at first. I'm going to keep using your words, exhilarating. It was like, wow, I had never seen this. And pretty much at the end, I was like, how do I swallow this? It was all this, really, all this brutality necessary to make the power clear, to make the influence clear. And this is maybe where it gets complicated, because, of course, we're not in their shoes. We were not in their situation. It was other times. Maybe I'm looking at it with a too modern view. My view is maybe too modern. I'm looking for more like the peaceful, the empathetic image of a woman. As I said, it took me by surprise that I was even given in a thought. Like, okay, women and violence together in one picture. What is this doing with me?
Gabby, that question is so interesting. Women and violence. I think it was necessary to show.
Because they were capable. If we see men fighting a battle, in a medieval battle, if we see men, knights, destroying themselves, cutting up their legs and heads and whatever, we're like, okay, they were pretty brutal. But we had never seen it done by women. So is this something like, wow, badass, that they could do it? Or was this something like, I don't know.
Yeah. For me, it didn't present such complication. They were trained for battle. For me, it showed essentially they had the mental and physical capacity to do it. But also you can see more from a general kind of, more from a human perspective, you know, what it takes to fight these battles. What it took throughout history to fight wars mm-hmm. that were face to face, hand to hand. It's just the history of humanity and war for almost the entirety of human history up to the First World War, when we had modern war machinery. War was fought you know, face to face, you know, body to body. It was just brutal, and it was real, and it was, you know, and I think the movie didn't shy away from that, because why would it shy away from, these are warriors, period. We're seeing female warriors, but they, you know, it shows the capacity of any, I guess, if you want to go deeper, it shows the capacity of any human being to be brutal.
Yes.
It shows the capacity of any human being to become brutal and really lose themselves in battle, like ruthless. The capacity of any human being that has been trained in such a way, because one of the interesting part of the movies is the training that the Agoji go through. Those are some of the most usually those montage of training in movies are fun, and this is no exception. We have a lot of training scenes of the Agoji, and you have this incredible, beautiful group of women training in the art of war, training their bodies, training their minds, and learning how to work together, learning military tactics. Those montages are fun. But it shows the capacity of any human being that is turned into a machine, into a war machine, to become quite ruthless.
Yes.
Which is a sad statement on humanity, essentially, you know, like.
Yes, Nene, but it's a very good input. It's a very good insight. And of course, it speaks, of course, of in some way of the equality. You know, there's no weaker gender to fight a battle body to body. So.
I think that's the point it makes. I think it makes the point that you know, you don't need to meet a man or a woman to become brutal in wars, become ruthless, become a tool of your kingdom, of your government, to kill all the people, cause as much damage as possible, defend your land, whatever it is. Everybody has the capacity when you're trained that way. And it's, again, it's just a sad statement of humanity and our ability to wage war. Essentially,
so there we go. We have representation of women, representation of Black women, and representation of warrior women, which are still fighting wars all over the world. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. But there are some distinctions here, and I want to, if we're talking about representation here, there are some, because we're talking about how fearsome they were. Mm-hmm. The scenes. This movie is violent.
Oh yeah.
A warning to anybody who, we always say, please watch the movie and then listen to the podcast, because there will be spoilers. If you have not seen this movie, please do so before you listen. But anybody who has watched this movie knows that this movie is very violent. This movie doesn't shy away from graphic scenes of violence. I wouldn't say it's gratuitous violence.
Mm-mm.
But it's quite violent. Like, it doesn't shy away from the realities of battle, for example.
Yes.
But one thing about representation that I really love as a woman from Venezuela is that after all the military activities, the battles, all of those things, the life, the daily life of the Agoji in the palace was fascinating to me. Here you have a group of women who are training together in a palace. They are highly respected, highly taken care of. They are some of the highest, most respected members of that society. They live behind the palace walls. Men have no access to them. They have to be celibate. So this sorority, strong sorority, develops, and you see it throughout the movie. How they care for each other, how they fought for each other. There's some beautiful scenes of the women, the girls, many of them just young girls, you know, being together and confiding in each other and just, you know, going through this very challenging training together and crying together. For me, as a woman of a certain age, that is a bit of a fantasy that I would like to live. I often think of a convent and just being with women, surrounded with women, not concerned with, you know, raising children or cooking, or just doing our work, just doing our intellectual work or our work in peace. And the Agoge were able to do that. However, we learned by reading a little bit of the history, of course, this was not all positive. The way that the Agoge were recruited into the army was, you know, terrible in many ways. These were, you know, for example, King Gisso, he had multiple wives, and all the Dahomeyan kings had multiple wives. And the guard, the Agoge were initially a palace guard, may have started, this is what historians believe, may have started as just the extra wives that he didn't want to have children with, that they were not attractive enough, so he would, you know, make them into the palace guards. And because these were his women, no man was allowed in, because these were his women, and so on and so on through the decades and then in the centuries. So some women were actually sadly captured from other regions, sort of as slaves, and brought into the army, brought and made to, forced to be a Agoge. Some were wives who have been unfaithful, that the husbands will bring and just leave theirs for them to be a Agoge, or young girls. And it, actually, one of the main characters in the movie is a young girl who's rebellious, who refuses marriage, and her father
sets her away.
He sends her away. He gives her away. It's like, you are no good. You are no good to us. You don't want to marry. Go. And he gives the girl away to the king for her to become. So the ways in which women became part of this
elite. Yeah, they were kind of like an
elite army was not.
And the reality,
volunteer.
Of course, and the reality is, of course, tough. Of course, they had certain freedom, a certain privilege. Because, of course, they were very protected. They were very protected by the king. They had certain status in society. And they were taken care of, just everything you mentioned. But, of course, at which price? They had to fight or die. And it was a role chosen for them. You know, it was like, okay, this is okay. If you want to be protected and get your meals for the day, the price you have to pay is you have to become a warrior, and you cannot have contact with your family or whatever, or have a family.
Yeah. Or find love.
Or find love. Like they have to, of course, give up on love.
Give up on love. So, but I will say that this part of this aspect of it is lovely done in the movie. Like, there's beautiful friendships and relationships that develop that show the strength of sorority, the strength of how the, you know, obviously brotherhood is beautiful. Sorority is also beautiful in its way, right? How women are together, because they're distinct, right? We men and women do it in different ways, and here you can see the distinct.
Yes, I like that, Nene.
Ways in which women, in which women bond together and work together, and so on. I love that part of the movie. I really did.
So we got another representation. Representation of female sorority, of women working together, women as communities, which is really, really strong. I love that aspect of the film as well. And I agree, the scenes where they a little bit like intimate, when they have like moments, just two of them or three of them talking and reviewing what had happened or just giving each other advice. Some of those moments are actually the most beautiful moments in the film. So apart from talking about the significance of representation, which we have gone through now, and we found a lot of input to that question, I think we can just really go into detail on the film, on the performances, the actresses, the actors, and all the technical aspects, because it is clear for me, or at least that's how I see it, that this film shines technically. It's like a really brilliant production. So I think it is definitely worth it to go through it in detail. And the first question to discuss, or the first topic to discuss in this new section is Viola Davis. Viola Davis's performance. So what are your thoughts on her performance, on her role? And maybe you can also mention one of your favorite scenes with Viola Davis.
Ooh. Wow. Viola Davis. What I was going to say, thank you, Gabby. Thank you for introducing the next topic. I think Viola Davis' performance, it leaves an impression. It really does. What I was going to say, and this ties in with her performance, is that what the film does well, I think, is that it shows the many dimensions of the Agoji, at least of the main characters, right? Because the other ones are, you know, secondary roles and so on. But in particular, Naniska, played by Viola Davis, she's a general. She has reached the highest role in the Agoji army. She's the leader of the army. She trains the new recruits, the army. But she has her own personal story going throughout the film. And there's never a separation between her role as a general, her capacity, her ability as a general, not only strategically, as a leader, physically, as a warrior, and her own personal story. She has a history of tragedy herself, a past trauma, and we see it all. And I think the movie does that very well. I think that's the script, but of course it's Viola Davis' performance, that you can believe the many dimensions of this woman, warrior, who is able to talk with the king, give advice. At the same time, she's able to lead her all-female army and be gentle and be strong and fierce and brutal at times. But her moral compass is so clear and strong. I think that's what Viola Davis does. You can see her moral compass very strongly in every role she plays. Kind of like you can see clearly the line she draws, right?
Can you mention one scene with Viola Davis that really left an impression on you?
Yes. She's being shown throughout the movie. This is going to be a spoiler. Should I spoil?
Go ahead.
Yeah. She's being shown throughout, you know, to be physically fit and incredible, a leader, et cetera, et cetera. And then we learn that she suffered this horrible traumatic experience. She was raped repeatedly, and she had a child that resulted from this. And there's a scene where she's telling this to her right-hand woman. And she's just leaning against some structure, and she's completely defeated. Her face is completely defeated in tears when she discovers that the new recruit that came into the force might be this long lost daughter. And her face,
yeah,
her whole demeanor in this scene is remarkable. And she's this right-hand woman who she's grown up with is telling her, you have to, you know, give her advice. And she's just absolutely defeated. And, her face acting is just so unforgettable to me. She was so distraught and done. But this other person is bringing her up and she's listening. She's listening with desperation in her eyes, essentially.
Yeah.
Listening, just eating up every word that she's telling her of advice, essentially. I cannot forget that scene.
Very good. Loved it. Nene, the character you're mentioning is Amenza, and is played by Sheila Ateem, which was absolutely.
Oh, Amensa.
Gorgeous.
Amensa. Very important character.
Very important.
So Amensa is giving her advice, telling her what to do
because
at that moment.
They
Amensa
share,
and
they
have
share,
grown up together.
Yes, they share that story together. Yeah? Amensa
yes.
is involved in this piece of her personal
exactly.
story. And I agree, Nene, this was a very moving and very human scene because there we see, okay, she's a very tough, clear-headed warrior and strategic decision-maker. But
yes.
at the same time, in that scene, we see she's just a human and a woman. It's just a
yep.
grounded woman with a horrible story. And she, as you described it, she really looks like out of breath, out of... That she kind of really breathes at the thought that,
uh-huh.
that this could be, you know, meeting her past, right, right within, within her own walls. Yeah.
Yes.
A surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What about you, Gabby?
I had to really reflect a lot to choose my favorite scene with Viola Davis. And I picked one where she is also very human, funnily enough.
Okay.
There is a scene pretty much to the last third of the film. She's in the palace and she's taking a bath, which is a very beautiful setting. She's taking a bath in a beautiful kind of like a cave, I don't know, room in the palace. And now we... who might be her lost daughter, joins her because she wants to tell her something important. So she, now he comes and joins her into this bath. And she was just having like, you know, she was like thinking a lot. And then now he comes and kind of takes her away from this private moment. And she tells Nawi her story and what is going through her mind and what she thinks might be thing, you know. And I liked that a lot because she was humble. Again, she was very human. All the status, all the rank hierarchy that she had as general in that very intimate moment was all gone. She had like really drowy eyes and shaky voice for the first time in the entire story. And she was, you know, telling Nawi how she went through what she went through and how she marked. I don't know if we should say that, but we have given so much spoilers that we could, might as well just give it all away.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I really like that. I really this humbleness of this moment and how she actually just, you know, she said, like, okay, I have to let it out. I cannot really hold it back anymore. I have to tell this story. I really liked it. And of course, what she says, what I also liked about the scene is that, I don't know, should we say it? She had this baby and she marked this baby with a tooth. She opened the flesh of the baby on the shoulder. She inserted a tooth and the scar was kind of what identified this person. Afterwards.
Yeah.
And I really like that, even though, of course, it's not quite true to science. this might not be possible at all. But I really liked that how they portray this story. It was like a little, you know, it's like this touch of fairy tale, of legend built in a very, very cruel and brutal story. And it gave you like the little flavor of, you know, you're reading like a fairy tale, you know. And they also went how they designed the scene that she's talking to Nawi in that moment, but she's also going back. She has like flashbacks, how she did it, and so on. She comes back because, as I said, I think it's a very unrealistic story, but how they made it doesn't really make you look like, you know, you really think that this could have happened. It had this fairy tale touch that came across, I think, for me, very subtle and very delicate. So that was my favorite scene with Viola Davis.
Thank you, Gabby, for that.
Okay, Nene. So our next question to discuss is, as I said, we're going through kind of the technical part of the film. In regards of set design, costume, makeup design, music score, how period film is this film for you?
That's a good question, as all your questions are. You know, we wanted to expand the movies that we talked about in this podcast. Because yes, we are, as we say, obsessed with period film. And when we talk about period film, we were essentially talking about European film. But Gabby and I are now older. We are no longer the kids in Maracaibo dreaming about, you know, about the future or about faraway places. We are grown up now. So we understand that the definition of period film can be expanded. So that's one reason we chose this movie, because it's a historical film, but it's a fiction film. And I'm not sure if it can qualify as a period film, but we nonetheless picked it for the main reason that it tells the story of women, which has become our main theme throughout.
Well, right? And it touches a period of history. It's just another part of the globe that we hadn't covered yet. So
exactly.
I think it's very justified.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The thing, I guess what I'm trying to say, and I think we need to study this, I need to study this. Who invented the war period film and what it represented? Usually is European cinema telling their own histories. So a movie in an African country would not necessarily fit into that because it's not the tradition of this cinema. That's all I'm trying to say. Exactly. But yeah, it's a part of the globe we hadn't discussed before. So for these reasons, I don't think this can be discussed as a classical period film.
But do you feel in the period, given the costumes and the set?
Okay, in this way, yeah. Well,
where
okay,
do you feel transported to the period?
I'm going too much into genre, but yeah, if we think about how in the period you film, how historical it feels, I would say some ups and downs in this movie. There are some things that are so real. There are some things that are so real, but actually that feel almost timeless. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to explain this. In terms of, for example, the costume design, I was mesmerized by the costume design of this movie. It's incredible. And again, we have very little knowledge. We have no knowledge, actually, of any costume. But we have seen a lot of European period film, right? So we have an idea of what's correct. We have no idea of what is correct here. We have no knowledge, but it felt so real. It felt so lived in, especially all the, and this has been a theme for me as well, all the work clothes, and in this case, the military uniforms and training clothes of the Agoji. Wow. I really, really, really enjoy that aspect of the movie. Yeah. In terms of the set design, there's a lot of the main set is the palace of King Gisu. And at times it looks a little bit too new, too Disney, a little bit. But again, this is a brand new setting for us. It's actually really beautiful. Like there's some areas of that palace that are so evocative. There's these hanging baskets that I kind of got obsessed with. there's aspects of this palace that is really beautiful. And again, there are some parts of it that feel very lived in. Maybe because we are from Maracaibo, Venezuela, which is a hot, dry place for most of the time. Some things felt very familiar. Like the color of the earth. Like the bare feet of people. Like the, you know, short skirts of the uniform. Like the costumes felt very familiar to me. This is the practical clothes that you wear to move in a hot place like this. So me being from Maracaibo gave me that little bit of insight into you know, it feels right. It feels it feels appropriate to the climate, to the culture. But, you know, this is with no knowledge whatsoever of what these uniforms look like or what this palace looked like in real life. But, you know, it was convincing. Some things were less than others. For example, from there's sadly some recreations. Well, it's important, but, you know, sadly in historical terms, recreations of, you know, the where the Portuguese, because in this case, the King Iso was dealing with the Portuguese mainly. And we see the areas in the country, in the coast, where they will, you know, be having their ships ready and where they will be holding the you know, the kidnapped people before selling them. So there's some recreation of that, you know, the selling, you know, the boar where they will sell the slaves. So there's some of that. And for me, some of the European characters were the less convincing ones. Like some of the, you know, the white Portuguese and those characters were the less believable for me. The way they talk, the way, you know, their costumes, it felt a little more costumey, a little less believable, the whole aspect. So that took away a little bit from the the story for me.
Very interesting, Nene. Because I think we agree in some things and we disagree in others. I would definitely say this is very validly a period film because, as we just said, this is on a historical, on a point of history that happened. So it's in the past. So it talks about a period, of course, in an area that we hadn't explored so far. So, but of course, I also have to admit that it is quite an unusual film for what we have seen so far in our understanding as of until now. Of what a period film was, so it was very unusual, but very refreshing at the same time. Very refreshing to expand this horizon. Yes. In regards of costume, I absolutely agree. The costume design was impeccable. Nevertheless, even though I loved it, I loved the costume design. I think it really shone how they differentiated training outfits, fighting the outfits for the battles.
Yes.
More daring, more beautiful. Then they had some outfits for the agoge where they dance. They had some scenes where they dance and they were wearing some colorful two pieces outfits that were beautiful. Then they had a initiation ritual which was amazingly designed, not only because of the costume, but the makeup was extraordinary and the music was extraordinary. So for me, the costume was excellent, but there is a but. There's a comma in my sentence because I think that it was too polished. It looked too new. That what you said, that it was lived in, I disagree. For me, it looked at certain points and also the seams of the, you know, how it was manufactured. It took me out of the period. It looked too sleek, too perfect, too, like as if neither life nor time has passed by, neither through that outfit nor through the palace. And that is where I agree with you, that the setting of the palace had that Disney touch for me as well. It was too sleek. And it doesn't mean that it has to be raggedy. But it didn't really look as if time had passed through those walls, you know? It looked too new. It looked like a setting from a Disney park.
Yeah.
As beautiful, and it might be very accurate. I don't doubt at all that it was accurate to the area and to the period. They certainly had the best and very experted research done on this to do this. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
But the look, what they chose to present, for me, it was like, okay, this is just like really brand new made. And those were the things where they said, okay, the seam of the, you know, the all the threads and all the a finishing of all the costumes. This looks so new. This looks so neat. This can't have been done like this in 1823, you know? So that did
it. It looked like it was done
in machine, like sewing machine.
Like
yeah,
sewing
that's how
machines.
It looked. So impeccable. And the ropes of sad. King Gesu, which were also the colors, the jewelry, his wives were also amazingly dressed, and the makeup was so beautiful. But you see, like, his robe was as if he was just wearing that for the very first time. As I said, as neither life nor time had passed by those clothes. So that took away a little bit of the period film feeling for me. It didn't look real.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. And I will have to think really closely to the costumes again, to the clothes. But I'm happy you mentioned the Rose of King Gisu, played by John Boyega. They're magnificent. I mean, we haven't talked about his clothing is really, really remarkable too. And his performance, I really like. If we can really just touch on his performance, and I think it fits into the discussion of, you know, period film. Something that I think the script did well is that they didn't try to make him into a good guy or a modern guy in any way. He is very much a man of his time and place. He had multiple wives. Of course, he had the vision of creating this, you know, of developing this, of transforming this palace guard into an army. He had, you know, and there's some aspects of the Dahomeyan culture that were egalitarian in this way. But he had multiple wives, and his word was the final word. He was unfortunately, he traded slaves from other regions, from other enemies, right? He was a slave trader. The kingdom thrived through this trade. And this is shown in the movie, which I think is, you know, credit to the script that, you know, they made a nuanced character that, you know, he had some vision in some aspects, and he was very much a man of his cult, you know, his time in others. Right? And John Boyega did
a good
really job,
liked
I think.
His performance as well.
In creating this balance, you know, this believable kind
of they didn't make it look like the super avant garde visionary hero of his time, you know, like slave trade is bad.
No, not at all. Not at all.
He was, as you said, true to his time, I like them.
Yeah, he was a practical man, and he maintained the, you know, his rule as a man. All decisions came down to him, you know. And this is portrayed in the movie, and I think that was well done.
Very well.
Very well.
Yes, we have now closed our discussion section, and we are ready for the next. Please, Nene, be my guest.
Yes, Gabby. Thank you very much. So now we're on to our favorite segment of the episode, our Wicks and Candles quiz. So as you might know, if you have been listening for a while, we have the quiz. It consists of now 5 questions that give us an opportunity to discuss other aspects of the film through these very specific questions. So the first question of the quiz for Gabby is, what is your sweaty wick? One thing you didn't like about the
movie? Okay, I'm going to make this short. We just talked about it. It was exactly that aspect of costume and set design that it really had no signs of life or time passing by, that it made it really look like a Disney park. That would be my sweaty wick. What is your sweaty wick?
My sweaty wick is the performance of Hero Finn Stiffing as Santo Ferreira. I think he was the weakest link. He is a white Portuguese slave trader. And I don't know, it was kind of one note, kind of like, I mean, he's a minor character, but he represents this great evil that we're fighting. I didn't feel believable I think he was underwritten. It's not the most important character, but anyway, it was just, I think it's because it was the link to the reality of what was happening. They could have had a stronger character, perhaps. A more formidable villain is the leader of the Oyu people, who are actually the main enemies of the Dahomeyan people. So that was a character that was much more well done than this one. So I will say that characterization, yeah, I guess, and that performance.
I agree with that. It was like the typical villain on Hollywood
series. Yeah. Yes.
Very good.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to the second question. What is your shining candle? One thing you love, Gabby?
Well, I liked many things about the film. We talked about many performances. We talked about... but among all this range of positive aspects, I chose the initiation ritual scene. And maybe I just explain it quickly. After they had done like the main training and they have chosen like the best of that class, they had one night initiation ritual, and all the Agoge women are gathered around some kind of altar, and they're wearing white gowns, and they have a special makeup, and they do like a ritual with where they cut a little bit of their skin, and they collect their blood all together, and then they throw it over this altar. And this entire scene, I think, is wonderfully well done, and it summarizes so much of what the film itself embodies. So it's not only visually beautiful, because as I said, the gowns were beautiful, the costumes were beautiful. All the Agoge warriors look so dreamy, so elevated in these gowns and with this makeup. They had like a certain golden or yellow spots on their faces. It was so beautiful. The hairdos were beautiful. They were special for the occasion. And they were also singing some special chants in their language. It was just really, really heavenly. That scene was really heavenly. So visually, it was really beautiful. And as I said, I think for me, it summarizes so much of this strong, beautiful, powerful women who are sticking together through this blood unity, you know. I think it's also full of symbolism. That is my shining candle, specifically that scene. How about you, Nene?
Wow. My shining candle. I will give it to... The thing I watched the movie over a week ago, and I have terrible memory, but I will say, I live in a fantasy most of the time.
Yes, I know.
You know that. So of course, my fantasy world just kicks in, and I start to imagine, right, what it feels like to be training for this, like how it physically feels to be doing this work. And, you know, in some way or another, you know, this was horrific, right? You conscripted to be a warrior. You're going to be killing people and doing all kinds of horrible things. But the power of controlling your body, the power of being physically strong, the power of being physically capable, you know, there's something about it appealing, that is so wonderful and appealing. And this scene really shows the what comes with that, right? That strength, that self-confidence. And it's just beautiful. Those scenes were beautiful and fun.
Yes.
And unusual.
I have to agree 100% with you. Those were really, really beautiful scenes. And you know, Nene...
Yeah, so that will be my shining candle.
Love your shining candle. And this is exactly why the director, Gina... made it a must for the actresses to do their stunt themselves, because she knew that what you were feeling, what you saw as a viewer, what you felt like, this strong physicality. Yeah.
Want
she
that.
Said, you guys have to feel that you guys have to know how it felt to be physically strong and capable. Ugh. And this is why you have to learn your stunts.
All right.
It worked.
Okay, let's go to the third question in the quiz. Stolen costume or prop. What piece of clothing or prop would you like to keep from the Woman King?
This is, I think this is like a no-brainer. I'm going to take one of the costumes, and specifically a training outfit of the Agoji, and it's going to be the white one. They had like, for the rookies, they had the white, they were white with a
yes.
leather belt. And for the kind of like more experienced warriors, they were like colorful. They had like some red indigo stripes. And I would go for the white one. I want the rookie training outfit of the Agoji. Just so, like, I would wear it all summer long with some
oh my God.
Roman
Can
sandals.
You imagine that with some sandals?
Woo. Oh my gosh. Give it to me.
Okay.
That will be my summer outfit for like the next 5 summers. Because it was beautiful. Because he had some pants, so it's super practical, but still so feminine. It was like super practical and beautiful and feminine, and it was perfect.
Yeah, I completely understand that choice.
Okay, how about yours?
I will pick another uniform. They had like an uniform for, I don't know if it was for training or for, or when they graduated, but it was a striped. You just mentioned it was a striped uniform, like red and maybe indigo. I just love that one. It was so, I don't know, fierce and gorgeous. And I don't know, it felt so real to me. It felt so, how can I say? If I don't know, it evoked something in me that was familiar. Because again, it's just my own individual experience of coming from a very hot place.
This is so logical. Like such a logical
piece of clothing. It's such a logical piece of clothing for the work that you had to do. And I don't know why it evoked in me such memories of Venezuela. It evoked in me memories of women in Venezuela working, going about their day in the heat, sweltering heat, and walking and doing all their business and going and getting on the bus and going here and there and there and there in their clothing that is practical for the heat. I don't know why it evoked that in me, and it reminded me of that, and you know, it just, I don't know, it recalls something very deep in my memory that I haven't kind of figured out yet. But it has to do with climate, it has to do with culture, it has to do with a specificity of experience. It felt very real to me. It felt familiar. It felt like I can recall this in some way, even though I'm not from Benin and I'm not an Agoji, it reminded something in me that is kind of very real. I don't know how to explain it, but anyway.
You would take that one.
I'm keeping the striped one. I keep the stripe one, you keep the white. Okay.
Perfect.
Next question in the quiz. Describe the film in 3 words.
This is a really tough one. And maybe the most difficult question for me regarding this film. I would go, I noted 3 words. I noted fierce. I wrote down brutal in many ways. And feminine.
Okay, very good. Very good.
How about you?
I will describe it as, I'm going to use one of your words, brutal. I will say it was, the second word I will say is Hollywood. And inspiring. Even though it's Hollywood,
that's what Hollywood is there for, to spark dreams and inspire.
Yeah, and you have to do it, and you have to be inspired in the full knowledge, right? That what you're seeing is not entirely accurate or truth. You choose. It's choosing to believe.
Yes.
Right. I'm just and thankful.
You chose Willy.
So those three words. Okay, perfect. Yeah. Let's go to the last question. If given the chance, would you time travel to the period? Yes, no, and why?
Oh, baby, Nene, this is a clear no for me. This time and geography, I think it is like no secret to anybody that these were like excruciating times for humanity.
Yeah.
And given my origins, I guess I would be condemned. I would have been condemned to be a slave.
Yeah.
So no, please no.
Yeah. As much as I would like to have met the Agoge, I also would say no. The nightmare of enslavement is very present in the film.
Yes.
The nightmare, right? The nightmare that it is and that mm-hmm. it was is very present throughout the film. I think that's something that they did mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And there's something that we haven't mentioned yet, which is that I mentioned it briefly when I talk about the context that the Dahomeyan kingdom participated in the slave trade. That's what helped that kingdom thrive and be prosperous for decades, right? There's a story about Lupita Nyong'o, who was very involved in the movie, kind of production, like trying to get the movie made, but then suddenly she disappeared from the production of the movie. And it's because we assume there's a small documentary that she made about the Agoge, where she went to Benin to investigate, to learn more about the Agoge. And she learned that the Agoge had unfortunately participated in capturing people from other regions, from other tribes, and selling them as slaves or you know, keep them, you know, enslaving them in their own palace. So the nightmare of slavery is permeates the whole story. The nightmare of what is the other side of this? What is the consequence of these women not defending themselves or of this kingdom not defending itself? Like the other side of this is, you know, you're gonna be on the other side of history, you're gonna be on a ship. Maybe you'll make it, maybe you won't. Which one is worse? Mm-hmm. Making it to Brazil or the United States or anywhere else, or dying in the crossing, or so that's a horrifying period. And we have been in this period many times in this podcast, but we have never so closely dealt with this topic.
We have never been on the other side. Yeah.
No.
We have never stood.
No, we've been all usually on the European side.
On the European side.
Safe.
Very good, Nene. Yes, and I think it is a very valid point from your side to highlight this, that they really did it well, that it was very present.
Yeah.
And yeah, very cleverly made, built in. In some dialogues and in some scenes, what the consequence would have been and what the consequences were. Some people who suffer, what the consequences were of being captured and enslaved. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it is nightmarish. Like they really managed to capture the nightmarish aspect of this possibility and this reality. And I think that's a plus for the movie.
Yes. Very good.
Okay. Should I do the next section too?
Yes.
All right. So finally, Gabby, to wrap up our discussion, let's do our Wicks and Candles rating. So it's a rating from 1 to 10, where 1 is a very sweaty wick and 10 is all the wicks and candles. So Gabby, how many wicks and candles do you give The Woman King?
I'm going to give The Woman King a total of 8 wicks and candles. I'm taking off 2 wicks and candles. And because of this, what we discussed before, of this Hollywood touch to the film, that it made it not yeah, so believable at times as a period film. Yes. You know, like the looks of the costume design and the set design, and also the how the story develops is very Hollywood-like. You know, the story of Laniska, you know, having gone through a horrible past and then meeting your enemy again, you know, confronting your enemy, and then you have to fight your enemy and you have to besiege your enemy. The construction of the plot is very Hollywood-like. So this is why I take two points off or 2 weeks and candles off, because all the rest, I think we went in length, we talked about how good it was done, written, and performed. So it shines more than it casts shadows. Mm. How about you?
Yeah. I was going to be really not nice, but actually, mm-hmm. no, this movie deserves generosity. I'm going to give it an 8 as well. And I think it's a little bit boring, but I agree. It's just because I agree with the same exact things you said. So some of the plot points are very Hollywood, are very traditional. And these are choices. I don't think this has to do with ability mm-hmm. or of the writer or the director. It's just that mm-hmm. they sought to fit the story into a Hollywood storytelling to make schema. It as accessible mm-hmm. as possible, right? So, yeah. So some of those plot points are very kind of predictable, or, you know, things that you have seen. It's like this is a construction of a typical Hollywood story where you meet your enemy at the end, and there's a certain revenge scene that happens at the very, very end that is a little bit, for me, unnecessary. And some of those aspects of the set and those little things, some of the characterizations here and there. Mm. But overall, a very worthy film, entertaining, moving even. I cried.
Yes.
I cried at different times.
It does keep you tied to your chair throughout, so.
Yeah. Overall, I'm so happy we chose this movie. And I'm so happy we watched it together and we kind of had each other for comfort. While yes. we were watching it, because there's some parts that are very graphic, difficult, but in the end, it's a story about women, and I'm just so happy to see stories about women, unusual stories about women, given large screens, landscapes, mm-hmm. Spaces. I'm just yes. so happy about that.
Me too, Nene. And what we didn't mention is not only most of the cast is women, the director was a woman, the script writer was a woman.
Yes.
Most of the crew, the leading roles of the crew behind the scenes were also all women.
So. Oof. And the main producer was also a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, of course.
We have mentioned this before, that we have by now found a few films. It might be a selective impression that we are having, but we have by now discussed a few films that we say, why didn't we know about this story? And it took a woman to bring it up to light. And this fits exactly in the same.
There you have it.
Landscape. Yeah.
Yeah. Every single time, it's like, why didn't we know about this person?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And it's either a black person or a woman mm-hmm. or a black woman mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. who's bringing the story, because nobody's going to tell your story. Yes. Nobody's going to give you the chance. You have to tell it. It's unbelievable. Yes. There you go. Another example.
Yes.
Okay, well, Gabby, thank you so much for this discussion. Thank you very much. It was fun, as always. And enlightening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nene, for your insights. It's always very widening to go through it together, what it does to my mind and to my soul to go through all these topics together with you. Thank you so much.
Same for me and everybody listening. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram @wigsandcandles. Thanks for listening and see you next time.